First of all, I want to mention Linda Belkin is sitting here, the daughter of Shmuel Belkin, and I owe a great deal to her father. I'm only sitting here because of her father, but I'll only tell one story. This story, some of the stories come to mind, but this story appears in my seventh book, in my scholarly memoir, Washington. And I was a Rebbe in Yeshiva. Dr. Belkin appointed me in 62. I started teaching in 59, 60 years ago. That was Talmud Torah, then there was no Torah. I wanted to get married. So I graduated college 59 and two more years to Seder, and I taught in Englewood. Then I taught in Concourse Center of Israel. And then I joined the Yeshiva faculty. And one time, on a Monday morning, I get a note.
Can we adjust the volume?
Yeah.
I get a note that, I don't know, in Israel the microphones work, in America, I get a note that Rabbi Belkin wants to see me. Note from Mr. Abrams. So I rush downstairs, and I go to Dr. Belkin's office. I was on the second floor, he was on the first floor. And I'm reliving it, so you have to forgive me. It's Ed Mamalashin. Dr. Belkin hugs me and says, "Chumai Kagresha Yashikayach. I owe you a big thank you." And I look at him. What are we talking about? And he tells me the following story, that through the days that Yeshiva had parlor meetings to support the Yeshiva, this was a parlor meeting on the Upper West Side. And everyone is assembled like now, and the most famous lady living on the West Side walks in, Mrs. Manischewitz, the widow, the daughter-in-law of the founder, Bernard, the widow with the Tzvikius Manischewitz. And she was born in Cincinnati, perfect English. And she goes up to Rabbi Belkin in her loud voice. She gets to be over 100 in front of everyone. And she says, "Dr. Belkin, I want you to know that when I wake up in the morning, I thank the Rebbe Shalom for two things. One, that he gave me back life. And two, that he gave me Rabbi Rothko." Does everyone know who Rabbi Rothko is? He doesn't exist anymore. He morphed into Aaron Rakesha. And Dr. Belkin says, "What do you mean? Everyone understands more than Ilufanecha that you thank God for life, but how does Rothko come into the equation?" And she tells him she has one grandson, Anon Alfilman, named after her husband, Tzvikius Manischewitz. The girl Rabbi is no longer alive. And she said, "Rabbi Rothko is his Rebbe, and he inspired him to become a real Ben Torah, to learn Torah, to observe, and she is unbelievably thankful." Rabbi Belkin then tells me to get up to speak, and he said, "Mariah Rabosai, ladies and gentlemen, I need not make an appeal. You all heard what Mrs. Manischewitz said. Give me the ability to raise many Rabbi Rothkos." That was my father. Sense of humor, right on. All right, there are many more stories, but we'll leave it hang fire.
Now they keep to have it, take a bow.
They want you to take a bow.
They want me to take a bow?
Just stand up and say hello to the audience.
Yes.
And this is her lovely daughter and son-in-law. And the great Wacker family, I had many students. His nephew called me on Purim. It was Erev Shabbos. I get a call, Yerushalayim, Shushan Purim. We observe the day after you, and he's crying over the phone, "Rebbe, I owe you so much, what you did for me, what you inspired me. And I said to him, are you drunk or do you really mean it? I met Ellie weeks later. I said, you can mean it. So really, I really meant it. I promise Hashem. Now, this is my ninth volume. And as I'll explain at the end, these last four volumes are part of the series. And I dedicated it to charity. There's a reason why. Malka and I worked for the Mossad for 10 years in communist Russia. The security force was left there and allowed to talk about it. We wrote about it, and the Mossad put out a book with the Tifa de Mama. For those of you who read modern Hebrew, you'll read about Malka and I in that effort. When you come out of communist Russia and do what we did and what we were involved with, you have to thank the Rabbi Shalom. So I helped establish in 81 a spiritual center for Russian Jewry. We continued to function until today, and I lent a little hand in helping to raise the millions of dollars we need to keep our activities going, both in Israel and in 13 locations in the Soviet Union. Second to Chabad, we're the biggest player in the Soviet Union. Now, this volume is the hardest volume I ever put out because it has four different sections. It's not easy to deal with publishing, although the publisher happened to be my student, but he never, he's a Wayne Wismach, Rabbi Feinberg, lives in Beit Shemesh, and has a big publishing ministry there. He puts out Rabbi Schechter's books, etc. So one section is halacha, based upon my shiurim at the Kollel, and it deals basically with Rabbi Rachman's proposal to retroactively annul marriage. It's about 110, 120 pages. And I show that that is not feasible. I don't want to go into more detail. It involves many hours of shiurim, but it's all there in the book. The second section is a continuation of our work in Russia. And it's two new chapters with many historic pictures of what my brave wife and her simple husband are able to do behind the Iron Curtain. The third chapter is a collection of scholarship I've published over the last two decades. Some of it is slightly revised, and it deals with the Rav and the Rebbe, with the Rav and Professor Shaul Lieberman, with Yeshiva University, with Rav Reuven Katz, the Gedol Reuven, the father of my first Rebbe in the Yeshiva, Rav Michal Katz. I dedicated to Rav Michal and his wonderful wife, Hinder. Remember Hinder, wonderful, wonderful, inspiring people. I have on my Madrich in the Yeshiva, who everyone maledicts. I have something on Meir Kahana. He was not entirely bad. There were good points to make it to. And then comes the fourth section, which I am afraid would be the way I remember. I've given thousands of shiurim over the years, all different, 1501 Torah, and we're still going strong. But everyone remembers my hesped for Joe DiMaggio. In this section, pictures and documents, documents and pictures, I've achieved something that is unique. We'll come to that later. And already Wayu was dancing on the ceiling, and they're only going to remember, this is the man who didn't do anything else in life but that one picture in Radkafir Aaron, Volume 4. Let me explain these pictures. If you look at them on a simplistic level, you say, all right, my Catholic found a few documents. If you listen to what I'm about to say, you'll understand me 100 times deeper. I cannot write this because on principle I do not write anything negative. The greatest compliment I got out of my scholarly memoir, a Talmud said to me, Rebbe, 530 pages and not one negative word. It's a tremendous compliment. Because most people write memoirs, this one should be shot, this one executed, this one robbed. And believe me, I can tell you I've been robbed, I've been cheated, I've been this and that. So it's like, you give everyone, I thank the Rebbe Shalom, 50 years of achievement in Israel, thank God, the family God gave us, Baruch Hashem. Now everyone reads Art Stone. I have nothing in God's soul except for their values on history. They are not truthful. And they are not truthful knowing they are fibbing and lying. And yet, they say, I've spoken to some of them, correspondence I send, I never get an answer. I can't, it's mind-boggling, Rabbi Dr. J.J. Schachter wrote this topic. But I want to just speak about one area. You read the bottom they put out in Rav Hirsch, the bottom they put out in Mr. Mendel Lovitch. Torah began in America with Mr. Shlomo Feigenbaum and Lovitch, Peter Bedas. No mention of Rabbi Revel, no mention of Yeshivas Gedisko Hanan, no mention of the home that Rav Shmuel Belkin found when he came to America from Canada after he emigrated right away from Europe, 1928, 29 to New York. Comes into a Beit Medrash that was alive with learning. The Alter Mashgiach in Lakewood, Rabbi Bachfeld, when I wrote in Lakewood, I had a deep connection to Lakewood. I was just honored there. This, my wife and I had made a little luncheon for us. Aaron Cutler this past week. It's a story unto himself, but not for now. That Nassim used to tell me, listen, Arnold. Rav Shmuel Belk was my chavruta in the Beis Medrash. She taught me Gemara, and I taught him English. 1929. Gadol Lakewood will tell the story today. If they acknowledge it, they become honest. If they don't acknowledge it, they're Oscar. So Oscar Copeland leans out, Rabbi Revel. And I've written letters. I say, look, we can have different opinions. You can say, I don't like Yeshiva University today. It's too big, it's this, it's that. Fine, but it doesn't change what was in 1886, 1897, these are famous dates in Yeshiva's history, 1950, 1928. I was in Lakewood. I could make a case. Lakewood today bears no resemblance to what Rav Aaron Cutler established. It was a Yeshiva, my time, 102 students, everything focused on Rav Aaron. Today it has 6,000 students in 9 different Bodim Medrash. They Shamak and I were our eyes popped. We couldn't believe. But Sheyurim, the Rosh Yeshiva, everyone, once a week there's a different she in 4 different Bodim Medrash. In other words, the Rosh Yeshiva says 4 different Sheyurim, or maybe it's the same she in 4 different locations every month. You can't, that's not a rabbi, that's not the way. All right, so the answer, you come to Lakewood in your 20s when you know how to learn. It's a place to learn, not a place to learn how to learn. But please, in Lakewood, what language do you hear? English. I break into Yiddish. I had to break my teeth to learn Yiddish. I'm a third generation American. My parents were born in Holland. But it's either swim or sink. Today, everything is in English. Luke, and you study Torah in English. What I learned in Lakewood, I still remember Freddie Zucker and Baltimore, Lovish Fellow, convincing me as the age that the Gemma Pates and Moshe Rabbeinu in Yiddish, they know good at the Yiddish, they can't slang English. And if you don't understand, come back. So I want to show you. I uncovered the announcement that Torah Vadas published on Rabbi Revel's death, the founder and first president of the Yeshiva, the man who retired to Belton. And when you read that announcement, you'll understand the love, the reverence, and the gratitude that Torah Vadas had for Rabbi Revel, the first man to turn the spades in America. If you don't believe the announcement and say Rakefit made it up, which today anything is possible, you can't believe a picture. We had an 80th birthday for yours truly, my family, the family celebrated. I didn't want to go beyond that for a bit. I'm an old fashioned Jew and I'm an Aradakar Shabbat. So one of my grandsons, am I right, honey, that was the picture he put himself in? Where was it from? A family picture. My grandson, who's a Bezalel graduate, suddenly he's in the picture too. Today you can't believe the picture. I got home, This is 20-plus years ago. He's still alive. Mr. Irwin Waxman at West Hempstead was a student in Kailavidas, December 1940, when Rabbi Irwin died. And here is another student of mine who is in Nora Republic, a lawyer. He certifies that this is valid testimony given before him. And he describes Taylor Vidas, how they went to the funeral, Rabbi Quinn, Rabbi Pam, the students, they said the hill is Rabbi Rebel's caution. So please, be honest. Yeshiva Yu, in its inception, the first people to turn the spade of Torah on American soil. Here is a picture that involves a lecture of a lifetime, but I'll be very concise. Your father, obviously, is in the center. This is the Yeshiva faculty in 1944, right after Rabbi Belton became president. I've published this picture before. I identified everyone. I believe it's in my work on my Rebbe, my two volumes, Rav, the World of Rabbi Joseph, the Son of Ancient. So you kind of wonder, what did Rakefet do here? What do we need it for? What is it, the Chod of Din, that the sudden same all we have to repeat it twice? So let me tell you a story. It's a sad story. And it's a story of life and a story of forgiveness. 50 years and about 3 weeks ago, Malcolm, myself, and our children got off the boat in Haifa, Olim Chadashim. You know what it means to be a greenhorn in a new country? Even though I knew Yeshiva Shavitra, we don't know the language, we don't know the slang. Some of you know Hebrew perfectly. I'll throw words at you, you won't know what I'm talking about. You know Hebrew, of course. Tafran. I'm a Tafran. I mean Tafran. You know what it means? I used to use it in the army all the time. It's slang. I'm a poor kid. My pockets are sewn. Atem kuchem Tafranim. You understand? When I used that in the army, it made up for my American accent. Ah, tu echad yishalam. One of us. To use a bank, you know what the banks were like in Israel? It was a mob scene. I once told, why don't you make a rope and let them wait online? Ah, the Israelis were worried about. When the bus came, they had a contest. Who could not hold the most pregnant women on the way to jump on the bus? 50 years ago, this was Israel. But in Israel, at least it's a little bit easier because number one, you choose to come. The Tolikhen call me the youth of Number two, everyone is on the Chadash. And the Israelis came over on the Mayflower. You understand? When I walk the streets of Rehavia today, any person over 21 is speaking French or English. Only the kids speak Hebrew. If you're over 21 and speak Hebrew, they arrest you for desecration of their space. When I came in Aliyah, I was German. All you heard was German. No, what was it like for the greenhorns to come to America, running away from Hitler, running away to save their lives? And then they come to this country, what they would have been in Europe. So there was a Rebbe in the yeshiva, a Shmuel Geyser Volk. Remember the name? Rabbi Volk. Great Kamal Chacham, Tel's yeshiva, not Tel's of Philadelphia, not Tel's of Chicago, but the real authentic tales. And Rabbi Revel was autodidactic, a genius self-taught. The only yeshiva he ever studied in for half a year, he did the whole machlekes, whether he left or they threw him out, Rabbi doesn't come in and speak about it, it's his own bracha, in making of bracha. But Rabbi Revel always had a special feeling for tales. So he saved a number of people from Paris. This is the late 30s, they were rushing to save Jews, they had to get a non-immigrant visa, that you needed in America, not quota immigrant visa. There's a quota here. I write about it in the Revel in my first book. So we saved the shul lace of Volk, a young man, taught in Baltimore, brought him to the yeshiva that met him as an opening. And here is a man who in Europe would have been Tel Shereshi Shibi, this Avrito with a Chaim Rabinovich's son later killed by Hitler. These were the greatest minds of Tel's. And here he is in Yeshiva, Kuchelman, who is the Odyssey of Greenhorn, doesn't speak English. All right. A dramatic moment happened in the history of the yeshiva. I'm the ear and eyewitness, because you'll see in a minute where I sat. This was after the shiur, the rough collapse, September. And a wise Arab kid comes over in English. Rabbi Soloveitchik, you are denying Jewish boys the ability to study Torah. And the Rav jumped forward, what are you talking about? Rebbe, I graduated in Princeton, and if you knew the Rav, you really heard of Ivy College, the Rav's face lit up. I only learned years later that the Rav knew this young man's fame, Danny Greer. And the Rav said, Rav, what's the problem? And he says, Rebbe, I want to take a year off of learning, just to learn. And I don't understand you. You don't understand you. It's good. Tomorrow the shiur will be in English, and I'm going to give you a chinur after the shiur. It was Tuesday. The rest of the shiur, Tuesday, Wednesday. Wednesday, the Rav begins the shiur. We were fainting. Abba Branch, Rabbi, the famous Rabbi Branch, who was a survivor, went through the hell of the camps, Agera. He's sitting there. The Rav is in English. You can't believe what went on. The Rebbe is taking Rapaya with a Kepsa, with a conference. Suddenly it's all in English. At the end of the shiur, Danny Greer comes over. Rabbi Soloveitchik, I'm ready for my Bechina. And the Rebbe says, you understood? Absolutely. Good. I'm too tired to give a Bechina, but I'll continue in English. That was the death knell for Yeshiva Fitzhofer. Because once the Rebbe switched to English, every Rebbe had to ultimately either swim or sink. Rebbe David Lipschitz made the transition to Hebrew, because boys were coming back from Terebiyatna, the Woody Bear, written from Rebbe, the written from Matanid, the written from Harashmachid. He succeeded. The other Rebbe in the Tefer of Noyach, he said, Dole Yisrael, my Rebbe in the Noyach Barnstein, Rebbe Ruchim Gurelik. There's no future. So Reb Shmuel Leibovitz had a handful of students yet that haven't verstanden this in Yiddish. And then he took ill. And this is, I'm living in Israel already, but I was very close to Reb Volkan, close to his sons who were a year or two younger than me. And we were all Bronx family, Bronx kids. And Rabbi Gurir, Rabbi Volk, takes ill. And Yeshiva retires. He recovers. He's now in his early 70s, and he wants to come back to teaching. And the yeshiva says, look, you're not going to have students. They need English speaking rebellion. They don't take him back. He went to labor court. Do you people know all this? He went to labor court against the yeshiva. And the labor court ruled in favor of the yeshiva. He's in his 70s, he has pension, he has social security. Students don't understand Yiddish, so they refused to take him back. He moved down to Florida, and he put out two more volumes of his Sfarim Sha'arei Torah. When you look at the two last volumes, volume 6 and volume 7, he has introductions. You see the frustration, not too nice. He criticizes Belkin, Rabbi Soloveitchik, the late Rabbi Lamb, and he writes, it's not nice what he wrote, you see the frustration, but the yeshiva decided he doesn't exist. And this photograph circulates, and take a look in Wayu in Israel, the building which I got the yeshiva. When you look back, write the history, Rakefet gave yeshiva $100 million. But yeshiva, I got that duty from Mr. Grist. It's a legendary story. I can thrill you with it. But that building today is worth it. It's a whole campus, and there's room to build two more major buildings. So I see the picture, they identify everyone, and when it comes to Rabbi Volk, they say, unknown. And it's all over in circulars. So I want to tell you, the Zohar says, Hakol Talui B'Mazel, Afilu Sefer Torah Shebehevah. Everything is luck. You come to the shul upstairs, maybe there are five Sifrei Torah in the Aron HaKodesh. Which one will you use? It's mazel for that Sefer Torah. I define mazel, the right person at the right place at the right time. And poor Rabbi Volk was in the wrong place at the wrong time. If it had been the right place, he was the wrong person for that place at that time. We have to have Rachmanis. And I restored Rabbi Volk's name. So please, I ask Rabbi Belkin, Rabbi Soloveitchik, Mori Rebbe, Rabbi Lamb, they should all forgive him. We had mazel, never, and I'll tell you a story, I share with you, it's a classic story. I believe I write this story up in Washington. 56 revolution, they started to record the love. You know what that meant? Four students had to carry in the tape recorder. You can't believe what we're talking about. And thus is the Machta Gresharash, everyone knew they're recording Rabbi Soloveitchik. So after class, Rabbi Volk says to us, the kids he was close to, who hung out, you know, you can always judge who really loved the Rebbe if you don't run out of class the minute the Rebbe finishes the shiur. And Rabbi Volk says, for us, Machtunishman, we called you from my shiur. Why don't they make a recording of my shiur? So I said to him like an idiot, I said, Rebbe, you know that I saw the beach, I hold a doctorate, he has a doctorate at the University of Berlin. So Rabbi Volk says to me, Ich bin echt ein Gegradier von dem Gymnasium Tels. I also graduated from the Gymnasium of Tels Yeshiva. You can't philosophy, Eichen. No, I didn't want to say, Rebbe, a high school diploma given from Tels Yeshiva doesn't equal a PhD from Berlin. But that says it all. Now I want to tell you what I alluded to. Here is the most famous picture of the Rav teaching. It's the quintessential picture of the Rav teaching. Why do you use this in all the time? You get only one part of the room. You notice it's the windows. You don't get where the doors were, where you ended 102, where the Rav taught. It's opposite the Beis Medrash in the main academic center of the original building of Yeshiva, the building built in 28, 29. And Warren told me they always get inquiries, who is in this picture? To identify who's in the picture, first of all, people have their back to the camera. Secondly, you see a hand of someone. Notice the Rav's hand totally blocking the face of another student. My dear friends, students, took me 5 years, and I have to tell you the truth, the Makabah Parish, my life. A year ago, I had 27 out of 29 identified. Today, I have 29 out of 29. Okay, now, like there's much more to say on this picture. This is historic. 6 years ago, I have the date, because I know Danny Greer is in it. He only studied 1 year. How did I identify the one, the hand blocking? I called Chaim Soloveitchik. He was at the corner from the vision. He was lying. He couldn't believe I said, Malkin, and I told him. So I get him. There's no clue to the face. Other than the who's speaking, and you sat opposite me. So if I'm sitting here, it's Alan's hand that he had a jacket. Who wore a jacket? Reparley wore a jacket, so I can identify. There's another student, what you see is his nose. His brother-in-law identified him. And Mark and I drew the picture up. We were Red Weinberg and Saul Berman. He's married to Marsha Berman, the father of Racha. So it's him. So Mark has said to me, I'm so bothered, I have 28 out of 29. It's like I have 59 home runs. Do you want to keep that 60th and tie the bay? I don't want to go into the modern statistics. I don't take drugs. So Mark says, look, there's a piece of his bow tie show. Who wore a bow tie? So I opened up my Masmin from 59. And there is Izzy Wind in every picture with a bow tie. Israel Wind, the son of Rabbi Dr. Shlomo and Libby Wind. And then I remember that's exactly where he sat. But I'm about to tell you now, I apologize for those of you that don't have Hasidic blood in you. Litvak, but you have to admit you're defeated. Do you know that Izzy came to me in a dream from the other world and said to me, I quote, Ari, thank you for bringing me back to life. Now, this picture goes much further. I want a young man who wants to do something important. What's amazing about this picture, and here you have the total difference between Rabbi Soloveitchik's world and the so-called, I'll use a descriptive term, not Punjabi, but the Haredi world. Haredi world, you see a picture, 30 students sitting before a Baron Cutler, 1950, you know, more or less the 30 remain the same. You look at this picture, it's unbelievable who's sitting there. All the future leaders of right-wing Yeshiva University, centrist Yeshiva University, and leftist, the father of Mordechai Torah, Saul Berman, the dog, you know, the whole history, they're all sitting here. Look who's Rabbi Soloveitchik. And they're all sitting here, Bidechinu, sitting in front of the Rav, trembling. And you see, this is a very interesting question. Number one, to do research, I quote the book. I can't write it, I'm in the picture. The class of 1960 revisited. What happened to all 29? Many are not alive already. We're all in our 80s. Many are not alive. Maybe 40%. What happened to them? Aaron Lichtenstein, the Heschel Schachten, Yosef Jerry Blau, Kavruta, Yosef Blau. Rabbi Saul Berman. Rabbi Abba Bernstein, Rabbi Abba. He left the yeshiva in Aga. I met him in Baruch Hu, maybe 20 plus years ago. He was furious. He called me into his house. Ani! He shows me Rabbi Lenin's book, Torah, Madani, and other lines. Not right. A year later, he went to Lambda College. He was the founding Rosh Yeshiva. So now that you have so many diversion points of view, who went in Aliyah? You have here Jerry Blinstein, we see Prosh Yisrael, I guess my identifier with my youths, where Chevy University today. Who's the Rav? And you see, I have a letter which I haven't published and haven't revealed. The Rav wrote a letter in the mid-60s, it's in his handwriting. How he deals with Hashkafa. And the bottom line is very simple. Every student has freedom of choice. To quote the Rav, I don't force my viewpoints upon my own children. Allah HaKamba Kamba, not my students. And I can tell you many conversations I had with the Rav, I heard the Rav, where so tolerant of different opinions. I remember when he refused to sign the Chenim against Synagogue Council in 56. So I remember the student was picking him up at the airport. I don't want to mention the name because later he became a quasi-conservative rabbi. I know he remained through, but you know, conservative shoe. And he gave the rough hell how you don't rip the heck out of the conservative reform habit. I remember the rough, your opinion, I'm entitled to mine. That couldn't happen in the Haredi world. And this picture represents the rough. Finally, Achron, Achron, Chavit. All of you heard my lecture. Some of you heard my lecture yesterday afternoon on what Rabbi Brenner wanted, the Torah in the modern world. The reason I don't like the word Orthodox, because our enemies coined it for us, that we're narrow-minded, Orthodox, one doctrine. And I come from YU, and I come from the Rav Rashi, Belkin, etc. And there's a lot more than one doctrine. We're all part of the Torah world, but the basis of Torah observance is the Baruch Hashem, the Halacha, which we cannot compromise on. This commands obedience and respect. But all right, beyond that, who's to say a litva, a chesed, a yepenis? It's a fascinating area. All right. Yeshiva in Israel, you have so many different yeshiva, Tesla yeshiva, Mekas Arab, you have Panovich, Chevron, you have the Hasidish yeshiva, Ken Tibena of Israel. And I spoke about some of the challenges to Torah Judaism in the modern world. And I dealt yesterday, the first point of the lecture was dealing with the feminist challenge, which is the biggest one we face. But then I got to see the Haredi world is caught up in it as well. There's now a Chavera Knesset, who's supposedly a Gera Hasidah. You don't know the pressure they put on her to join the Likud and give Netanyahu a majority, and she refused. So here you have Kachal Lavan, she's with Gantz, I can't go into Israeli politics now. But he left a Hasidic woman who spat in the face of Ger, and yet she claims she's a Ger of Hasidah. More than that, the Israeli TV had a program a few weeks ago on a new base medrash. Boy, my eyes popped. A whole group of sophisticated young women, all dressed 100% seistic, all Beis Yaakov graduates, and they have a Beis Medrash, they're learning the Gemara, and they're now raising funds to make it a formal institution, and they want to learn the text, and boy, they're talking like Stern College girls of 30 years ago. I can guarantee you in a few years' time, in the Haredi world, just what I said yesterday, these girls are going to say, I can be a medical doctor, I can be a lawyer, I can be an accountant, why can't I be a rabbi? And Chaval, we couldn't record yesterday, Shia, I would have played it for them and said, listen to what a dummy named Rakefer had to say. So I want to tell you, yes, we spoke yesterday about ordaining women and the Rakefer solution, Aria, Yesse, etc. Rabbi Ariel agrees with me wholeheartedly on Baruch Hashem parallels, but a little bit more spelled out than the OU approach. So now I want to tell you, you're looking at a young man who's taught Torah for 60 years on every level, and today I have students, world famous people, because I don't repeat a Shia, so I have students that will be 40 years, 30 years, 20 years, 10 years, etc. And I boast to the world, I have Smicha from the world. And what's the story? You see this gentleman here, Rabbi Jacob Sasson. He's a virtual student of mine, Sasson. Rabbi Shulman died. Rabbi Ben-Sion Shulman, Rabbi Aaron Ben-Sion Shulman, taught at Stern College, wrote for the Jewish newspapers here, published books. You all heard the name, Rabbi Shulman. Left a wonderful family. He was no youngster. He died close to 100 years. So both his son, Rabbi David Shulman, and his daughter-in-law, Esther, also my students, spiritual students. So they opened up his archives, and this gentleman asked to look at the archives. He felt there might be material he wants. And in the archives, he finds a file marked Rabbi Revel. And he opens up that file, And there is an envelope opened only once, 1964, addressed from Sarah Revel to Rabbi and Mrs. A. Shurin, and in it he finds a letter. And we've transcribed the letter, because its handwriting may be a little bit difficult. We transcribed the letter, you have it word by word. And in that letter, Mrs. Revel had met me, Rabbi Dr. Bernard Lander, today of Toro Lander fame, Rabbi Lebracha. I had completed two masters at Bernard Revel, Dr. Sika. I was teaching the yeshiva, Rabbi Belton insisted I remained in the rabbi, I'm doing the first, but I don't want to delete this thing. First Orthodox Shul Suburban Essex County, the President of the United States owes me a thank you. The Kushners from Livingston. We were the first Maplewood South Orange. Now Maplewood South Orange, Springfield, Livingston. Oh, what's going on? Well, it was all conservative reform. First rabbi, Bob Shulman, wanted to build an Orthodox Shul. We had a million of his patients who we operated on that they drove up on Shabbos. I'm discussing in class right now. If you're following my lectures, I'll start up again in September. Can you invite people to your home Friday night if you know they're driving, or invite them to shul to make a living if you know they're driving? We're dealing with that very problem right now in class. And that's how we began. So one time I'm in the graduate school and there was a recorder. She was given a special title that doesn't exist anywhere else, but they didn't want to call a secretary without other school didn't function. Bernie Lander was a genius, but he did three things at once. Nothing got done without Mrs. Pearl Cotton. Do you remember the name? She was called the recorder. So Mrs. Cotton says to me, honored, it's time you started writing your doctorate. You're going to be like every other rabbi. You finished all your coursework, and you'll never get the doctorate done. So I went into Bernie Lander with a proposal on the Nesiv. I hate to tell you, my proposal led me to the doctorate on Hebrew. You are my very proposal many years later to the Nesiv. So he takes my proposal, and he says, Arnold, let me discuss it with the faculty. We might have a different idea for you. 2 weeks later, I get a note coming, meeting the faculty in Bernard Lander, and Bernie says, Arnold, we want you to see whether there's enough material to do a doctorate on Rabbi Lander. He says to me, nothing survives if Rabbi Lander. Children have not married, they know grandchildren. This is my Rebbe, he built the yeshiva. It's going to be his only monument, what you do. And with that, Bernie Lander stood up, embraced me, hugged me, and started to cry. And of course, if he cried, I cried. We reenacted it in Yerushalayim many years later in the home of the late wonderful people, Toby and Herb Willing from Paris Hills, if you know who I'm talking about, came on the yacht. We reenacted it, and both of us said exactly word by word what transpired so many years earlier. So we called Mrs. Revel, and he made an appointment for me to go to the Bourbon Hotel on 102nd Street on Broadway to see if there's material. I come into the hotel, and Mrs. Revel has 2 suitcases ready for the custodian to pick up and throw out. I open the suitcases. My doctorate came out of those 2 suitcases. Literally, it was the last moment, right on time. So we became very close, and she writes to Rabbi Shurin, who had written a biography of Rabbi Revel that appeared in the Yiddish press and then in Hebrew translation in his first book, Keshet Giborim. And she said, I want Rabbi Revel to meet you, etc., what I'm doing. And then she describes your humble servant. And I can only tell you, halavai, I should live up too much load on that. And now you wonder why I say it's my smicha? Because the yeshiva smicha is worthless. Everyone got the same cloth. Guys sitting in class who became tzaddikim, rambam, conservative rabbis, reformers, everyone got the same cloth. It was mass produced. This letter, alright, I have to be honest, I do have another smicha, which is very precious. I have the only smicha, the Mashiach, the yeshiva, gave all the years in America, Rabbi Yaakov Moshe, a Kohen lesson, should also be a familiar name to you, have a lot to say about that lesson. And this we reenacted in the class in Bruce, his grandson, a famous aura surgeon, a hand surgeon on the West Coast, came to class, we made a l'chaim, and I gave him a copy of the smicha his grandfather gave me, and he gave me copies of his grandfather's smicha from Europe. So I do have another smicha that's worth a little more because it's a personalized smicha, but there's nothing like this letter from Mrs. Zeller. In my office, that's the only smicha that is available for people to see. It is right there, encased in a beautiful thread. So I want to thank you, Rabbi Sasson. You brought your virtual Rebbe much joy. So, a few words now about Shlokami. And I have to tell you, we were frightened out of our wits. Again, I don't want to repeat the whole story. It's all in both the Mossad's book and both in Washington. But to make a long story short, I got a call in May of 1980, and the call went very simply. Are you willing to accept the call and not give you its contents? And I had many calls like this from students doing every sin in the world who think you're a priest, that you can give them absolution. So I said to Dr. Shah, Kavir, it was me, and I got to know this person very well, a Romanian immigrant who worked for the Mossad. Mailer, I said to the lady voice, Kavir Yadasikha, and a man gets on, you can Google him if you haven't heard the name, make believe you did hear the name, so the ignorant pass for the wise. Aryeh Kroll later receives Pras Yisrael, one of the founders of Kibbutz Sa'ar down in the Negev. And he headed up this division of the Mossad, and he said to me, Are you willing to teach Gemara in Moscow? And my wife always said, you're a chicken. If they ever asked you to go to Russia, you'd never say yes. I said yes on the spot, and then I started shaking. Says to me, what will you do with your children? He lists them out in the race. I didn't realize at the time I'd gone through a whole security check unknown to me. And to make a long story short, we began briefings, and that began our involvement with the Mossad. We went to Russia January 81. Later, I was responsible for the study of Gemara in the refusing community and many other things, but our shluchim, the people we sent, we had a chain going from January 1981 until the Communist Empire fell in 1990. We always had, at any given moment, two couples, four people, a husband and wife team, and Napierski trying to be tourists, and the men capable of teaching the mother in Russia. And this all came back this past Wednesday. It was a moment in time, a magic moment in one's lifetime. We were in Lakewood, and here's this luncheon, now alone, and here, Eric Cutler was truly entertaining. Then there were stories about the Barrio, the Great Tobra, the Israeli army, and certain things I was done, Baruch Hashem. And Aaron Cutler mentions to me he knows Rabbi Aryeh Katzin, the head of RAGE, Russian-American Jewish Experience. And he says, let me call him. And he calls, and this is the modern world, my mind doesn't understand it. He dials the 917 number and he gets Arye Katsin with a whole group of Russians in Kiev, Ukraine. And he puts the speaker, he puts the phone on speaker, and here is Arye Katsin and Aaron Cutler telling him, I have people here sitting, we're making a luncheon. Do you know Rabbi Aaron and Malka Rakefe? And Arye Katsin goes crazy. My Rebbe taught me Gemara, Malka, Rabbi Aaron. He tells the whole story of January 1981. And it was a moment in time. You can't believe the feeling in the room, the electricity, the excitement, the spirituality, and that every word I told them was true. Yes, I can sing Kiev. When we came back the first time, I helped organize Shvatan Yisrael Center. We had a yeshiva Russian language. It's modeled on DMT, which I'm from the first faculty in 1969. I always survived better than I should be many more years to teach. English to English, Russian to Russian. We have a kollel, a yeshiva, tremendous publishing over the years, including the Rav's Al-Hashuvah in Russian, Moriu Rebbe's Kol Dolido Fedek in Russian, and about 13 places in Russia today where we have classes going. Finally, I can tell you, those of you who know West Hempstead, a wonderful balabas from Forest Hills to West Hempstead, Robert Madden, died about 3 years ago. They wanted to immortalize his memory. So people gave this suggestion, that suggestion, and often I said, why don't you do a busy memorial? Let us bring people from Russia to see Israel for the first time. This past year in my COLO class on a Monday, 13 ladies from Odessa, Ukraine, all with bachelors, all participating in some of Shulami's classes there, entered my classroom, and from that moment on I had two of my Russian-speaking ladies, one is a student Harvard graduate, like you, but she lives in Ramada, so she's been in closer touch with me. The other one is married, I have a Russian student who got sneaker from the yeshiva. She's married, she became fluent in Berlin, Russia to Berlin. The other one became fluent in Far Rockaway. And I spoke, they translated, and they told their life story and translated into English for my students. And they went on to a two-week tour. This, a week from now, we're going to show with Tina a movie of these women where it's all over their inspiration. So thanking the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, all my scholarship I contributed to Shvatani. I wanted to use our total executive director. I had to receive the Shabbos, but we had to go to England. There's a party today in London, and tomorrow, or a few days from now, in Manchester. This is his assistant, Rabbi Yeshaya Jaffe. Yeshaya?
Thank you, Rabbi Rekhefe. That was fascinating. Thank you, Rabbi Waxlack, Zabrenner, for arranging for Rabbi Rekhefe come over Shabbos and speak. As I said, I'm Rabbi Shaya Jaffe. I'm the administrative director of American Friends of Shvut Ami, that the Rav just spoke about. We'll be having a book signing in the back in just a couple minutes. We had the privilege today to hear from a respected Torah scholar, prolific author, beloved master teacher, who has inspired many thousand students during his 60 years in the field. I'm sure I speak for everyone. I wish him and his Eishes Chayil Malka many more years of good health. They should be able to continue teaching, writing, spreading Torah for many years to come. Rabbi Rekhefe and Malka decided a long time ago they would do everything they could to help the Jews that everyone has forgotten about. The hundreds of thousands of unaffiliated Jews who are still living in the former Soviet Union. And towards that end, Rabbi Rekhefe was instrumental in becoming founding board member of Shvut Ami. Since then, he has spent countless hours traveling with Malka, lecturing, raising awareness, and funding for Shvut Ami's critical work, which is inspiring young Russian Jews to marry Jewish and to live Jewish lives. Right now, there's an opportunity to become a partner with Rabbi Rekhefe in this great tzedakah work by making a generous donation to his cause, to Shvut Ami. Every amount is appreciated, and every amount will receive a full tax receipt. As some of you know, Abir Kefet has written and published, you mentioned, 9 very popular volumes. We hope there's going to be more to come, Mr. Hashem. 5 out of 9 of these volumes are available in bookstores and online. 5 out of the 9. This 4-volume set, this is the 4th volume of the 4-volume set that the Rebbe is talking about, is called Rakafot Aharon. It's not available in any store or anywhere online. In other words, you cannot buy these 4 books anywhere. Type it into Google, you'll see they're not available anywhere. And the reason is that they were written by Rabbi Rakafa specifically to be used as thank you gifts to people who help him to help Russian Jews by donating to Shvut Ami. Anyone who makes a donation of $100 to Shvut Ami today will receive any one of these 4 books as a token of appreciation from Rabbi Rakafa. He will sign it as his thank you gift to you. And I want you to know that Rabbi Kefet is not taking even one penny for himself. He is donating 100% of the proceeds of Shvut Ami's work. I mention that because how often is it that you see the author of 4 books has spent years working on them, years, donating every penny of the proceeds to Sadaka. I think that's something very special, so I hope you'll take advantage. And again, even if you don't want to take a book home, any donation today will be greatly appreciated. Thank you for your support. Have a great day.
We will take a couple of questions. Where we can take one or two questions. Anybody have any questions for Rabbi Berkef? Any questions? Okay.